Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us after a week off, I missed him so much, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on the Twitters. And of course, RedState.com VIP, mostly VIP, some stuff outside the VIP stuff over there. Andrew, missed you terribly last week.
Well, I was busy getting Biden out of the race.
And congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Great
thank
job. You very much. We were all very impressed by this.
Thank you. But unfortunately, it didn't seem to change the polling, which is what you need to tell us about.
Okay. So, I mean, actually, that's good for Republicans. It didn't really change the polling. I think that one of the things that if they had gone with almost anybody else, the polling would have truly upended in this because people wanted something else other than Biden and Trump. The problem is that Kamala Harris is basically Biden with, you know, perhaps even less competency. At any rate, very unpopular.
Biden with less competency, but all the historic hoo-ha that Obama enjoyed.
Well, okay. So one thing that we need to do is we need to first off recognize that the polls didn't actually shift that much after the debate. I mean, they really didn't. Have you taken a look at the charting on this stuff? Biden dropped in the RCP, you know, Real Clear Politics aggregate. Biden didn't drop by much. He dropped less than 2 points in the aggregate average, and he'd regained most of that by the time he actually withdrew from the race. He was only like about 3/10 of a point off of his off of where he was at in the polls prior to the debate, which is, you know, next to nothing. And then if you look at the polling after the debate, of course, they shift to Harris as the head-to-head matchup. She's running right now, just today, as we're recording this on Monday, and I have a post that's going to go up a little bit later after we get done talking about this. She's running 1.7 points behind Trump, where Biden was 1.5 points behind Trump. And she's still trailing in every single battleground state, every single one. At this point,
by the margin of error?
In most cases, outside of it. You look at polling from Arizona and Georgia, and Trump's lead is outside the margin of error in almost every poll. You look at Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and Trump leads or ties in every single battleground poll that's been taken since Kamala Harris became the presumptive nominee. Those polls may have tightened just a little bit, but they're still, Trump is still leading in every single one of those battleground states. And we're not talking about one poll. We're talking 3, 4, 5. There's one of the states, and I forget which one, it says 6 polls in the last week, putting Trump up against Harris, and Trump is still in the lead. And so when you look at the Real Clear Politics electoral map projection, Trump's winning like 312 to 226. And for a reason, he's carrying all three of the so-called blue wall states. He's carrying Georgia and Arizona, which went to Biden the last time. He's carrying Nevada, which has gone Democrat, I think, for the last 4 cycles. I don't think Nevada went for Trump in 2016. The only thing that she managed to kind of gain back from Trump was New Hampshire. And I'm not sure how strong the polling is there, because that wasn't one of the battleground states that Real Clear Politics is tracking yet. But I mean, Kamala Harris in the Real Clear Politics aggregation as of Monday afternoon, when I was looking at this, has not led in one single battleground poll. And there's been multiple in each of these battleground states. She doesn't have a lead in even a single one of them. So, you know, Politico this morning, or early this afternoon, had this thing that Kamala Harris has upended the race, totally upended the race, not just upended the race, totally, Andrew, totally upended the race. And I'm looking at this headline, I'm going, I just got done looking at the polls. That's not true. Which is the reason why I wrote that post. But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I don't think that, I think Harris gives them a better shot at containing the damage, right? This is her honeymoon week, right? This is when you've got all the media just fawning all over her as the, you know, Camelot, right? The New York Magazine. Did you see the New York Magazine?
I don't know.
Shows Camelot. Her Camelot.
Yeah.
Camelot. And it shows all the, you know, it's got George Clooney and Barack Obama and Chuck Schumer dancing around. I guess it's a ball of twine. I forget what it was. Some weird thing that she's supposed to be sitting on. And it's these guys.
Well, how far behind is she?
Well, she's not terribly far behind, but then Biden was. Biden wasn't terribly far behind, even after the debate, which surprised me, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. And she still got the vice presidential boost and then the convention boost, presumably.
Well, I think that she's got a convention boost coming up, but how good that is depends on how well Democrats can contain their divisions. I mean, the same thing was true with the Republicans. They had a really good convention, right? Because they were able to mostly contain that stuff. They didn't really have any discordant notes. I don't know how well Democrats are going to be able to keep that up, but they might. Maybe they have a love fest in Chicago. That would help, right? But, you know, James Carville's been kind of sounding this alarm. It's like, you know, she hasn't really been in front of a report, you know, an interviewer yet. She hasn't really been challenged to explain her policy decisions. And there is a clip from the weekend of her trying to talk about border patrol and border, you know, border policy, not border patrol, but border policies. Alejandro Mayorkas is directly behind her when she's talking about this. And it's an incomprehensible word salad. You almost can't even diagram the sentences. It's so bad. And
well, I hope so. I mean, it should. I mean, I can't imagine her being where she is. I mean, it has to be delusional. They want her to win. You know, in the column I mentioned, it's kind of like going to a school concert and a kid gets up for a solo and totally butchers it. And then he gets loud, resounding applause because everybody feels for him and their parents. And it seemed to me that's the way Democrats were. We're rid of the Biden thing and we've got her and we're all going to clap and act happy. But to me, she should be far behind.
Yeah.
I'm not as smart as you.
Well, again, and I think this is about how entrenched people are, right?
Yes.
And the problem for Democrats is that entrenchment applies to Kamala Harris too. She is unpopular for a reason. Her unpopularity, her dive into negative favorability began before the Afghanistan withdrawal, whereas Biden's was triggered by it. Right.
Interesting.
First began in June of 2021. And it was because she did a series of interviews, the last of which was with Lester Holt from NBC, right? And this was the infamous one where he says, he's grilling her on being the border czar, which, you know, I'm not sure if you were around last week for the whole thing about, she was never the border czar. And Axios is editing its 2021 reporting so that they can claim it's now disinformation to call her the border czar. But Lester Holt was challenging her on that. And he says, but you haven't been to the border. And she says, oh, well, I haven't been to Europe either. Which was an absolute disaster, right? And after that, the White House basically put her on ice for the last 3 years. They didn't have her going out in front of Lester Holt or David Muir or is it Scott Pelley, I think, over at CBS that does the big time primetime interviews. Yeah. They didn't have her doing any of that. And now they don't have a choice. She's going to have to start doing those shows, and they are going to ask her questions about policy, especially
policy.
I don't know how they can avoid it. Yeah, I think maybe in the first couple of weeks they can pander and blow kisses and stuff like that. But after that, well, I mean, that's kind of what you're seeing right now, right? They're all
blowing. I know, but that's a great phrase, blow kisses.
But also, in this honeymoon phase, media honeymoon phase, I should say, this isn't a voter honeymoon phase. And it's very clear from these polls that she's not getting that. There's no there is no groundswell of enthusiasm among voters. There certainly is among the media. But that's not helping her. The media kiss-blowing. And I could use another couple of analogies that
would
I'm going to leave it at that. Brown nosing, apple polishing, whatever you want to call it, isn't really working. And James Carville's been warning about this almost since the time that she was anointed. He was he talked about it last week. He was talking about it again, I think, yesterday. This is, you know, as good as it's going to get, and it's not going to last. Alex Castellanos, who I you know, he had a video of Alex Castellanos, of course, a Republican political analyst, sort of a Republican Carville, less colorful, although Alex can be kind of colorful sometimes, said, this is Pete Kamala. This is Pete Kamala. It doesn't get better from here because she's out there on her own, and she can't be hidden, and she can't be sheltered. And I think that's true.
I hope you're right.
Well,
I don't think we'll ever be media pouncing on Kamala Harris.
No. Politico, another thing I wrote this this morning about Politico, which was they're claiming that Trump accused Kamala Harris of opposing fracking. Accused. Trump accusation, right? And I saw this because Andy Kaczynski from CNN, who does the K-File stuff for CNN, said, this is ludicrous. She's on record opposing fracking multiple times in 2019 and 2020. And
yeah.
Then Politico changed their headline without
really noting. Yeah. Really,
they changed their headline without noting the change. So I pounced on that, Andrew. Anyway,
you're good at pouncing it.
Because I've been a Republican, so apparently it comes naturally.
You're a peak pouncer.
So you have a, because I don't want to get too far into this without talking about your column, which is that Kamala Harris can win and Trump can help her. And I think that this is a really important point for people who are just assuming that the failed assassination attempt and this chaos-inducing last-minute switcheroo on the nomination means that Trump's going to sail to victory. There's still 3 months left to go here.
Yeah,
skeptical that Harris has the talent to prevail here, but I'm not putting it out of hand either. And I think you're raising some important points. So let's talk about that. How can Kamala Harris win?
By Trump not being presidential. In that debate, I thought he came off very well, very presidential. He wasn't interrupting. Of course, he couldn't interrupt with the microphones, but he wasn't interrupting. He was attentively listening as opposed to Joe Biden staring into oblivion. He demonstrated his recall. His demeanor was presidential and serious. I don't think it would have been if he was playing to a Trump crowd. I know rallies are different, but when they have an audience and they start cheering, he starts playing to them. And I don't think that's helpful. You've got a woman who is potentially historic, but very unserious. She doesn't do her homework. She's lost 90% of her staff since she went in. Her word salads are now epically famous. And so the only way she can look good is if Trump looks petty and bullying, especially a woman. There's a double standard. There's no doubt about it. He could say things to a male candidate that he would get roasted for if he said it to Kamala Harris. I get that. But he needs to be presidential, because if you put an airhead and salad speaking potential president up against a guy who has been president, knows the issues, sounds tougher and certainly more aware than Joe Biden, she has saved the Democrats from the age issue, but that's not an issue with Trump yet. So
of course they will.
And he mixed up, I think, Nikki Haley and Nancy Pelosi. Well, that's what happens when you speak extemporaneously all the time. So anyway, he could elect her. I mean, this campaign has so many twists and turns. It's fascinating. He could help elect her by being petty and small and punching down and punching at everything. He just needs to let it go, talk about his vision of the future United States. Let J.D. Vance do the dirty punching.
You know, and, you know, J.D. Vance has kind of run into this too, right? I mean, the comment about cat ladies.
Yeah, well, that wasn't all that smart. But...
Well, I mean, it kind of goes to your thesis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's saying, well, I was being sarcastic. Well, so was Hillary Clinton with the basket of deplorables thing. She was being sarcastic and dismissive. And so was J.D. Vance. It's a bad, you know, you have to decide when you're going to get involved in electoral politics is whether you want to actually run for office or you want to do stand-up comedy or you want to do political analysis, because those are three very different things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Vance found that out.
Yeah. Well, and he's, that's the downside to him. He's untested on a national stage, and you can bet that Axios and all the others are digging into his background, not just the book, but I don't know what his stock holdings are or what his financial connections are. And I don't think they'll do much of that when she picks a vice president candidate. I think she pretty much has to pick. Gretchen Whitmer said, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? She said, not me, but wouldn't it be wonderful to have two women on the ticket? And I think that would be a disaster. She needs to have a guy there, and she needs to have a guy to help her. That is Pennsylvania or Arizona. And Mark Kelly, well, first of all, for some reason, we talked about this, I think, last time. For some reason, Democrats feel they have to pick someone from Congress as their vice presidential partner. They've done that every single time in 96 years, for 96 years, except one, 1940. And Roosevelt picked a cabinet member. It's the last cabinet member. It's what I said about Hillary Clinton running. If she picks someone in Congress, probably, or not probably, but possibly Mark Kelly. You know, oh boy, he's an astronaut and a pilot and all of that. But I was reading this morning, he founded a spy balloon company. Yeah. Did you read that?
Yeah, yeah.
And he got as a major investor, China.
Yeah.
What is he thinking?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're not going to see that made into a big deal, although I think it should be. So she'll have a little bump, probably, from the vice president, unless she picks,
that she's going to get much of a bump from vice president, because honestly, I don't think that vice
president. But it's the attention. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
It's the attention. In other words, we're not talking about Trump. We're talking about her. And then you can talk about her judgment and all that. But I don't think the media is going to be all that critical. And then the convention, which Antifa has threatened to demonstrate all over. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. Chicago has a bad taste for Democrats. I was at the 68 convention, and I can tell you tear gas is a bad taste. But I was in the Hilton downtown, third floor or fourth floor, and I looked out the window, and there were the police. There was a mob of demonstrators downtown. They weren't able to keep them out of downtown. And the Chicago cops, who were in those days law and order, and Mayor Daley was all for that, they were pushing the demonstrators, and they broke the store windows, pushing the people into the store display windows. Excuse me. So now the convention is going to be at the United Center, which is not downtown. But and the Chicago mayor is he's not helpful. He's talk about airheads.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think Chicago in general is going to really help them out. But look, yeah. I actually think that it's most likely going to be Andy Beshear, because Andy Beshear has actually been sort of campaigning for the job, so to speak. He's already attacking J.D. Vance as somehow inauthentically Appalachian. Now, he's from that area and he knows Appalachia. He's a Nepo baby. He's Steve Beshear's kid. Right. I don't think that that's the typical Appalachian. I'm sure he's located in Appalachia when he was Steve Beshear's kid. But Steve Beshear was governor of he was longtime politician, longtime Democrat Party leader. I don't think that Andy Beshear had the typical Appalachian, you know,
upbringing.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Andy Beshear's cars are not up on cement blocks in the front yard.
No. Hey, look, I mean, maybe that's a plus too. I think Beshear would actually help balance the ticket out, but I don't think Beshear's that interesting. I don't think Mark Kelly certainly isn't that interesting. And a large part of your normal consideration for running mates is they don't distract from the person at the top of the ticket, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think in this case, you want somebody who's going to distract from Kamala Harris. Do those interviews and try to keep her from being scrutinized on policies that she's just too airheady to actually grasp. I mean, this thing with immigration was really something else. I gotta find this. It's not up yet, so I gotta look for it among the drafts here. So give me just a second, but I will read you what Kamala Harris said in response to a question about border policy. And so this is what she said. I am meeting with a lot of folks, and the work we have begun is the work that is going to be ongoing. There is no question, and I said this from the beginning, that our approach to this issue had to be a commitment to long-term investment, and it has to be a commitment to consistency. The United States has to be consistent. There are times when we are more engaged and we saw good results, less engaged, and we see where the work and the partnerships then deteriorate. So I am committing to ensuring that we engage in an active way on the root causes, on addressing the cause and effect, and also being partners in the Western Hemisphere, understanding that we have a responsibility, and that if we ignore that responsibility, it will visit itself upon us in a very domestic way.
Very domestic. Very domestic.
Domestic. It almost reminds
me. Where was that from?
Well, this was on, it was either on Saturday or Sunday.
I said in the column that she was from the Professor Irwin Corey School of Public Speaking. You remember him? And I had a link. He started every speech, however.
But I mean, this is the type of word salad. She said nothing. I think it's a full minute saying absolutely nothing, right?
Yeah.
And finishing off on that, it will visit upon us itself upon us in a very domestic way. It's almost like Mitt Romney's severely conservative. I consider myself a severe conservative. I mean, it's just not the way people talk. It sounds weird.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Speaking of which, I got to ask you about the. I know we don't have a ton of time left on this episode, but did you watch the endorsement from the Obamas? Did you watch that video? I mean, I didn't.
I read it, but I didn't watch it.
Oh my God. You got to go back and see this thing.
Okay.
Right? Because they anoint Kamala Harris by Monday of last week, right?
Yeah.
That's when Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and all of the dump Biden activists said, okay, you know, everybody's got to line up behind. I'm lining up behind Kamala. She's great. That's exactly, you know, I love this plan, you know, sort of thing. Let's do this. And then everybody's waiting around for the Obamas to weigh in. And tick, 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 gets to Thursday, right? And they still haven't said anything. And NBC asked, well, are you guys going to say something or not? I mean, there was actually an interesting little mini report from NBC on one of their live update things on the election. And it was like, well, we plan to say something soon. But, you know, the idea is that it'll be an endorsement. So I'm expecting, well, they're going to have some sort of like rollout, right? That the Obamas are going to appear someplace with Kamala Harris on stage with her.
Yeah.
Raise her hand up on the dais. Yes, she's our champion. Instead, on Friday morning, I mean, early on Friday morning, there's this video where Kamala Harris is walking around and suddenly gets a phone call on her cell phone. And it's the Obamas. Hi, Barack. And Barack and Michelle are saying, oh, yes, we endorse you. You know, you're our girl. That's actually a quote from this endorsement. And the camera just happened to be following Kamala along while she took this completely surprising phone call from the Obamas. Yeah. They literally phoned it in. They literally phoned in the endorsement.
That's right.
I mean, that's pretty low energy, right? He did the bare minimum.
And no picture of hugs on the stage.
They didn't even FaceTime her, right? They didn't even they could show the Obamas on the phone call going, hi, Kamala. Nothing. It was strictly a cell phone call. This was your grandpa's cell phone call.
Oh boy. That would be a good Saturday Night Live skit.
Oh my God. Feel the excitement from that. Right. And so, look at the endorsement. It's like, you got a phone call, man. So bad. Jeez,
That is bad. It's weak.
Very weak.
With no video evidence of them.
No, and I'm sure it was them. I mean, it was clearly them. Their
voices. No. I know that, but I mean, so there's not a lot that people can call up with if there's a landslide against Kamala, and they say, well, look, despite the Obamas.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is too. I think that they want to do the bare minimum to legitimize her as the nominee, and that's it. And nobody wants their fingerprints on it, which is the reason why Gretchen Whitmer was saying this morning, yeah, they haven't been vetting me at all for the running mate position. That's fine. I want to stay in Michigan until 2026, and then I'll figure out what I want to do. Okay, we got a couple of minutes left. You got to tell us just quickly your other VIP piece, which was from Thursday. Joe Biden says he's going away, but he leaves us an immense legacy of damages. And
this is what you and I have talked about since you pointed out his downfall began with the abominable Afghan exit. That was painful, and all the time, 10 million illegal aliens are sneaking across the border. And actually sometimes being bused to inner cities where they can't be tracked down so well, undocumented, and they're not all Latins either. So there's that. And of course, the economy and inflation, and what was it, $5 trillion in new spending with no measurable improvement. Tons of lies. I mean, I just, all politicians lie some, but geez, every day he was on camera, Biden was telling another whopper or two or three. So she's got a lot of baggage to defend, and she has to defend it. She was part of it. And he's, you know, from day one, which is a little bit unusual. From day one, all of the news releases from the White House and so on said the Biden-Harris administration. It wasn't the Biden administration with Kamala Harris. It was dual labeled from the get-go. So she's going to have a hard time. The media may try to let it float by and not pounce, but she's stuck with that. And this may be a secret backdoor way to get rid of her.
I think it's possible. I think it's possible. Yeah, I think they figure maybe this is just a lost cycle anyway. Although, again, if you look at the polling, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Think
about this scenario. Well, Joe Biden isn't in great shape. And if we have a wag the dog scenario and something happens to Joe Biden health-wise, and like that, it's President Kamala Harris, first black, blah, blah, blah. And it's not re-elect, but it's elect President Kamala Harris. I don't know that we've ever had that before.
Not this close to an election. Yeah.
No, not that. But I mean, calling, you can't say reelect. So you can say, or you can say, send Kamala Harris back to the White House. Kamala Harris back to the White House. But I mean, that's a win-win for everybody. She's, and you can bet she'll have an Oval Office address about the passing of the guy they pushed out.
Well, and I mean, it would certainly be appropriate at that stage, but it would be very similar to LBJ running in 64, you know, Truman running in 48.
Yeah, but Humphrey didn't succeed before the election. So
no,
it wasn't
I'm talking about 64, not 68.
Oh.
Kennedy died in 63 at about the time that they would have been putting together the reelect campaign for
Right. Yeah. And we didn't have the procedure to get a vice president then. So it was
not officially, that didn't show up until 68. But yeah, I mean, that was sort of the tradition. It just wasn't constitutionally grounded until 68. But yeah, no, you're right about that. All right. Well, I mean, I think we're just about out of time, but man,
I got nothing funny, Ed.
All right. I'll tell you a quick joke, and I got it from Instagram, and I got to try to remember this, right?
Okay.
So a duck walks into a bar. He's got a newspaper under his wing and a cigar in his bill, right? He sits down at the bar and says to the bartender, "Why don't you give me a beer?" Bartender says, he looks shocked. He says, "You talk?" He says, "Sure, I talk." He says, why don't you give me a beer and some peanuts?" And the bartender gets him the beer and the peanuts, and he just starts reading the newspaper. And when he's done, he walks off. The next day, shows up, same thing happens. And the bartender says, why have you been coming in here? And he says, "Well, you know, I'm a plasterer. I'm working on a project down the street. I'm a plasterer." He says, "Really?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "So I just come in here on my lunch break and have a beer, and I go back and keep plastering." Bartender says, "Okay." So the next day, the circus is coming into town, and a couple of people from the circus are there. And he says, "Hey, have you heard about this duck that walks, talks, and has, you know, can carry on conversations?" I said, "No." They said, "Yeah." And the bartender says, "I think he'd be fantastic for your act." And they said, "Yeah, well, if you can arrange it, you know, if you know this guy, yeah, I mean, arrange it." So the next day, the duck walks in again, right? Orders his beer, he's got the cigar in his mouth, has the newspaper. And the bartender says, "Hey, have you ever considered working for the circus? Because they're in town." And the duck says, "The circus? You mean the, you know, where they have all the animals in the cages?" He goes, "Yeah." You know, he says, "Where they have like the three rings and stuff like that?" And he goes, "Yeah." And he says, "You mean where they have the big tents on the poles?" And the bartender says, "Yeah." And the duck says, "Why would they need a plasterer?"
I didn't see that coming, which is what made it funny.
I don't get it. All right. With that said, of course, the Prince of Twitter is back. The Regent of RedState.com. back with us for the rest of the, hopefully for the rest of the election, or maybe we're all going to take some time off at some point during this period of time. But you're back, and you can find out more. Go to @AHMalcolm on the Twitterses, and of course, redstate.com. Andrew Malcolm, thanks so much, and thanks for laughing at my joke.
Oh, no, that was a good one. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.